Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Great Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, go to pnwa.org. And this is our membership drive month. So if you sign up to be a member of the PNWA, which costs only $65 a year, if you sign up this month, you get a free half-hour coaching session with me. How about that? Which would normally cost you more than $65. So it's practically for free. You can learn more about that at pnwa.org. I should say that, remember that every Thursday, although actually not in November, it'll be on Wednesday the 6th, I do host the Authors Roundtable down at East West Books in the Ravenna District of Seattle. If you're a local writer and want to come join me at the table and talk about all things writing and publishing. Also, if you like many of the ideas expressed here, you can go to williamknauer.com, where you can maybe contact me about speaking to your writer's group or your writing class or your writing organization, or even if you want to do some one-on-one coaching. Of course, if you just want to have some daily inspiration, pick up a copy of Write Within Yourself, an author's companion available where all fine books are sold. So as you well know, the world of publishing is constantly changing. It wasn't constantly changing. It probably was hardly changing at all until the last 10 years, and recently it has been changing aplenty. And today's guest, Stella Cameron, knows all about change. Once upon a time, it was her ambition to write literary short fiction, and that's just what she tried to do. Her fondest dream was to be published in the Atlantic Monthly, which she tried to do for several years with no success, until one day she found herself at a writer's conference and a very wise and intuitive instructor suggested she take her hand at commercial fiction. He thought there was something in her narrative style that would lend itself to the commercial waters. And after she got over the shock of this suggestion, decided to give it a try herself and discovered that she rather liked it, and lo and behold, did have success at it. And now, had success at it, I should say, the tune of about 14 million copies sold worldwide. But Stella's not done changing. She's just now decided to take a swing at independent publishing with the publication of Cold, which I believe is not only her first independent book, but also her first mystery, her many other books having been in the world of romantic suspense. So change, change, change. Stella's not afraid of it, and she's not afraid to talk to me today on the air, which she is right now. Stella, welcome to the show.
Hi there, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm fabulous. How are you doing?
Pretty good, thank you, as long as I don't cough in your ear.
Well, don't worry about it. It's happened before. As you heard in the intro there, I just love your story, Stella. I love the story of how you were able to change the directions at that early point in your career, because not everybody's willing to make that shift. For some people, the ego wouldn't permit it, but you did.
I think you've hit it. I think you've hit on the head the difference between, do you really want a full-time career as a writer and in whatever publishing route you take, or do you want to hang on to every golden word that you ever write so badly, and to your initial thoughts so badly that you cannot change? Now, it sounds like a horribly derogatory comment, but I'm too old now to be sweet, kind, and generous at all times. And you know, you also have to live, and I had to make the decision. Am I going to have to continue to do things that don't make me happy for a living, or am I going to write for a living? And I wanted to write for a living, so I gave it a whirl, and I went about it very seriously, and with few exceptions, I haven't regretted it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't doubt that. But I have to believe that although you were willing to sacrifice, as you say, that idea of holding on to every golden word as you moved into the world of romantic suspense, I don't think that if there weren't some element of those stories that satisfied you, you couldn't have written as many of them as you had.
I agree.
You know, it had to suit you in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
I couldn't agree with you more. I think what became more and more evident to me was that my belief in the basic value of human relationships is so strong that it became more and more natural to be writing, to spend a great deal of time developing character, a great deal of time developing those relationships, so that everything that I write bounces back and forth off interpersonal relationships.
Yeah.
And it really was not a hardship. At first, I'm sure there will be people who will know exactly what I'm talking about. I had to deal with the giggle factor, you know, from my peers. You're not really going to stop, you know, writing about symbol and at every other sentence, are you? Well, yes, right. Yes, I did.
Yeah, but this is such a common story. Stella, when I talk to writers who really write in the genres, because for most of them, and not all, there's some who really never even didn't read and didn't ever try to write what we call literary fiction. But for a lot of writers, literary fiction is always the beginning because that's what you're taught to read in school. And most of the people who teach writing teach literary fiction, who come from a literary fiction background. And so there's always this moment where you have to, and that's what's considered, I mean, this is the word that no one wants to say, but good. That's the good stuff. That's the stuff you're supposed to write.
Much of it is. Much of it is absolutely beautiful. And I love to read it. But frankly, I love to read most things. I either love to read, there are times when I hate to read something, in which case it has a very short life in my hands. But I absolutely agree with you, Bill. It's good writing is good writing, and that, you know, the beautiful sentence and the wonderful description and the sense of place and personhood and all of those other things go together. That's part of good writing, no matter what you're writing. And you know, schlock is schlock on the other side of the coin.
Well, and you said you talked about being interested in human relationships, and I think it's one of the critical things when you want to write in a way that you can sustain is you understand what matters to you and you don't question it. So, for instance, perhaps for you that is the value of human relationship perhaps can't be something that can be quantified. It's simply known. Does that make sense to you? And
yes,
you can write
from
that knowing?
Yes. Yes, it isn't a question. I know how difficult human relationships are. I mean, I think anybody who has lived in this world at all knows that human relationships are a dodging game at all times. Yes, they're the wonderful, wonderful times when you know you're sitting with a good friend and everything is perfect. But by nature, I think human beings are combative. I think we have different opinions, and sometimes we're selfish. A lot of the time, we're selfish.
Oh. Yes.
And that leads to all manner of conflict. But, you know, fiction is conflict. Fiction is trouble. Therefore, it's about overcoming conflict in a way, too, overcoming the trouble that comes along within a story or a relationship within a story. I mean, of course, the story is very important, too. I mean, the plot is very important.
It's hard to differentiate, though, in a way to really extract plot from character because the plot...
I agree.
It's about the things happening, the characters moving along through time and space. And so whenever I hear people differentiating, I feel like, well, in many ways, they're inseparable, plot and character, mm-hmm. plot and character, plot and character.
True.
Because it's all about what characters want and can't have and so on.
It is. And also, of course... plot impacts character, so that characters behave in according to who they are in a given situation. Like, for instance, in Cold, I'm dealing with, I deal with a woman whose life has fallen apart. She's gone back home. She does not expect to stumble over a dead body in the icy ice and snow early in the morning, but that's exactly what happens to her after she's just starting to settle down. And so it isn't just up to her character or her decisions as she, you know, about, okay, go back home, see if I can get myself together, make a new life, buy the local pub, blah, blah,
right.
blah. It's
right.
about there's a body that I just fell over
right.
on a hillside, and that changes everything in my life because it brings all these other elements in. Okay, how do I react? That depends upon who I am and what kind of
right.
a character I am, and I think that's what you're talking about, Bill.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, so speaking of mystery, now, did I get it wrong, but cold is really your first mystery because before
first,
it was really
as I would say how can I put it pure mystery
first
time that I this is the first time it's the first book in a series, and it's the first time that I set out to write a series of books based yes on characters, because the characters there are ongoing characters in the books, but
yeah.
The mystery is a very central element. It isn't that when you write romantic suspense, I sort of always felt that the two elements should, or one should try to have them have even Stephen, you know, kind of a 50-50 balance. It might go 60-40 or whatever, but regardless, you're always thinking in terms of the fact that the relationship, the romance, and the suspense each have their very important part. Well, in a mystery, I don't have to explain mystery to you.
I do know what mystery
I think
is.
You know, Bill.
I was going to say, in a mystery, that mystery has to be a little more forward, doesn't it?
It has to be a little more forward. But and I'm feeling more and more strongly about this and more sure on my feet as I work. That doesn't mean that you cannot, as a writer, if the relationships of people, and that might be a relationship with a couple of old spinsters who run a tea shop, or it might be,
right.
who knows what it is. I'm not writing cozies, I'm writing straightforward mystery. But still, you're developing relationships, and it is the people who keep coming into the book that people are reading to see what happens to those people. I mean, let's face it, if I read a great deal of mystery, and as I'm reading, to find out what's happening. You know, I want to know what's going to happen to the people that I would like to win. You know, I want the villain to get slaughtered, trashed, stomped upon, mashed,
right.
put through a meat grinder, thrown
right.
away. But I want the people that I care about to win. And that, you know, it's the ultimate justice, and this is it. I mean, that's what mystery is. It's the winning of good over evil.
Yeah, and you know, my introduction to mystery as a boy was not in books. Well, that's not true. Actually, it was the Hardy Boys. That was the first. That's true. Those are the
truth
first
comes
books
out
I got
again,
hooked
see?
On. I forgot about that. Yes, those were the first books I read. But what I was thinking of was Columbo, the old series starring
Pete
Falk,
yes.
right? Did you ever watch that? Okay.
Yeah, of course.
So this, in a way, is the classic mystery formula in that I would watch that show as a boy, really, not as an adult. A, I wanted to see the bad guys get caught, but I wanted to see Columbo catch them, because the nature of how he caught them was so satisfying for his humility and his, you know, his unshavenness and his messiness. That was part of the beauty of it. So it was as much about him as it was the mystery. That seems to me the delicious combination that the mystery offers the reader.
Absolutely.
It's not just
a
puzzle.
No, it's not just a puzzle. And that's why I think as your characters are growing in a mystery, as you're, you know, thinking, you know, you're cogitating through the process that goes on when you're getting ready to write the book, when you start to write the book, And to me, the reason why I tend to rewrite the first third of the book so many times, and I'm embarrassed to say how many times I usually rewrite the first third of the book, is because those characters change, grow, become more complex and interesting, and there are things that I have to do because all reactions aren't always as they should be when you first start writing about a character. So it's a kind of seesaw.
Now, when you say you rewrite the first third, do you mean it's like I got to get that first third set so I can launch myself appropriately, or do you write the whole book then go back and noodle with that first third over and over again?
I do a seesaw motion back and forth through the book. I might write a third and go back and look at the very beginning. The way I begin a book is never the way it is published. It's always going to change. I'm always moving forward. I don't stop and go back and absolutely rewrite sections of the book as I go. I go back and maybe make some little notes and noodles along the way, and then just keep on going forward. Because once I'm into a story, I don't want to stop. And I figure I'd probably end up with the most polished one third of a book that was ever written and never finish it.
Well, now, you know, I was wondering. Now, see, I've said this before. I have an odd, I don't know if you can call it a talent, but I can usually identify how much a person outlines when I meet them. It's a weird and useless skill, but there it is. And you don't strike me as an outliner, as a strict outliner.
I didn't think so.
And so even I know that J.A. Jantz didn't outline her mysteries at all. So she might just plop a body on the first page and have no idea who did it and then find out as she goes. You can certainly do that in suspense where you can just kind of roll along, but mystery always cries out for outline. So how are you handling that?
I tend to do exactly what I've always done, which is at the end of a day's work, after I've had a little break, I will sit with the good old yellow pad and pen and just start to throw ideas together and narrow them down, thin them out, fatten them up, whatever, for my next day's writing.
Yeah.
And I've been doing that now for a lot of years. And I just make my notes, and the next morning, that's what I get started with. And if I don't like it when I get started, then, I back off and have to think. But it's such a shifting process. I've never understood how people could try to boil the process down to a system.
Yeah.
It's I suppose I have a system, but it's a system of total chaos.
No, you know what it is actually, Stella? I got to say that this is absolutely true. When people who don't outline, often when I talk to them about it, they apologize. They say, "Oh, I know I should outline, but I don't." And I have learned that if you don't outline, you better not outline. But if you do outline, you better outline. That way.
I agree with that. And there are times when I have to stop and really do a huge think and take some things apart, particularly, I think, in the area of motivation, because we can go rushing off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can go rushing off with what's a wonderful idea, and then you think, uh-huh, why?
Why would they do that?
Yes. Why?
Why are they doing
and it's all about, fiction is all about why.
Yeah.
And so I do stop, but I just have always been sort of a seat of the pants writer, and that's not going to change now.
Well, and what I have learned about that, because I've been writing about my own life lately, where there is its own outline, so that it's I don't have to start from scratch, but you'd still have to winnow it down. But even when I was writing fiction, I didn't outline, and what I decided is that to not outline requires a different kind of discipline. You have to be focused and relaxed in a different kind of way than the discipline sort of enforced on someone by the outline they create ahead of time. Because you can't really go anywhere when you sit down to write. It's got to be within the current of the story you're actually trying to tell, which requires a particular kind of focus, I think, a certain kind of discipline.
I understand. Would you say? I understand, I see that. I think one of the things that makes it difficult sometimes to analyze these things, or for me to stop and listen to what you just said and then think about that, is because it has become, when things are so natural, when it's so natural. It's what you do all the time and what you've done all the time for, you know, however, 30-odd years, actually. I might as well get honest about this. It's absolutely intuitive. It's not. I mean, I know when I've gone wrong. I know when I'm going wrong, and sometimes I will keep on going wrong, although I know I have. I don't know, 20, 30, 40, 50 pages, because I'm having a good time doing what I'm doing, and then I think, know, I'll just shove that over into that file that I never look at again, and start again. With that, I mean, redo that.
Yes, you do. And but although that's intuitive, you have entered brand new waters in a way, professional waters, in that cold not only is your first true mystery, but it's also your first independently published book. Is this
That's
right?
correct.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Let me tell you, Bill, until you've done this, I don't know if you have you done this yet?
I came close to doing it, and I decided to let someone else do it for me at the last moment. So no, I have not, but I came close, and it's a lot of work.
Well, it's huge. Oh, hang on. I am not doing this. I mean, I'm not doing any of the technical work. I have I'm with a company in California, Easy E Publish and Purple Papaya, and they do, I do is give them the file. I don't.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no idea how I would take that. I mean, that would be pathetic. It would take me 10 years.
Yeah. And so what do you think?
Well, I think I like it.
Yeah?
I've had this is proving to be a very positive experience. The book is selling well. And I've been really pleased with the reactions to the book, but people have been very kind about in reading for me. I did have it edited by one of my former New York editors, because I'm not comfortable without the usual editorial process. I'm just not, and so I had it. It has been edited. It's they're proofed the same as they would be if they went through a publishing house. And there's, I put a promotional plan into the works, and I'm still in the process of learning what does and what does not work. And sadly, I have to tell you that there's a longer list of things that do not work than do work.
Welcome to the world of publicity. No one exactly knows, I don't think.
Well, and nobody ever did. I think, in the world of traditional publishing, traditional publishers have always been feeling the water this way and that way and the other way, because they could never quite figure out what would work. Sometimes something clicked and it worked fabulously, but many more times it didn't. And all we can do is just keep at it. But if I had one message to give to people on all of this, it's that yes, you can do it. You can do it as far as the digital publishing goes. Although I also have the books are coming out are also in paperback.
Sure.
Because I prefer that. If you're not having fun with however it is you're writing, then don't do it. I mean, if it's an absolute miserable trial, then I think people should not do it, because it shows.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Who is that? Brando Skyhorse, who said his teacher, he took, I forget who he studied with down in Stanford, but she said, no fun for the writer, no fun for the reader.
That's right.
And I believe that absolutely.
I do too.
It's got to please you. And you've got to search for what pleases you while you're writing. And sometimes I forget. I'll just be there mechanically. Like I write a daily column. And that's easy for me to repeat myself, and I have to stop and say, you've said that already, go find something new. There's something new in there. Just go look for it. It's there, but you have to be willing to look for it.
You do. You do. And that is. I don't know, in writing, when you were writing fiction, if you ever got that sensation that you were repeating yourself, because
Oh, yeah.
That is a very sad sensation with fiction. Okay, you know, tell them, but please don't tell them 20 times. And, you know, you are just filling pages at this point and spinning your wheels and using words to do it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I understand.
But there's always that fine line. I think every writer has to go through that of have I explained it enough yet? Have I made it clear enough? Because you don't want to be too clear and be just, as you said, just going on about it. But you don't want to be so cutesy that they totally don't understand what it is you saw. That's one of the, I think, the one of the muscles you have to build of knowing what is enough. Never really know
for sure. I think that is a writerly sin to be too cutesy. In writing mystery, I think that we have to be fair. We have to give the readers a chance. I don't mean that you're going to deliberately plant a clue to such a degree that everybody says, aha, and they've got it.
Yeah.
But at least give the reader an honest chance. I mean, just to bring things out of the blue, by the same token, to line everybody up in a room at the end of the book and have them say, well, I did this and I did this and I did this. These things, it's always such a fine balance. But the planting of clues, the just those little tiny things that you learn from time and experience to incorporate are so important. Because I know as a reader, I do get a little ticked if I think somebody tried to pull the wool over my eyes in an unfair manner,
yeah,
or in a stupid manner.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I always think that to some degree, I was talking to Kevin O'Brien about this, the suspense writer. I think it was he.
Right.
And I always thought that to some degree, even when you do suspense or mystery, to some degree you're a stage magician having to say to the reader, look over here with your left hand while you, with your right hand, plant the clue. Because you've got to kind of distract them a little bit while you're showing them the things that they don't realize they're supposed to see. Because they have to be
goodness,
obvious to them.
My goodness, are you trying to come up with an explanation, with a description of a politician?
You're not a politician.
I think you've got it. Look over here.
That's right.
Yeah.
But to some degree, you're doing that, you know.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
so
I think you are.
Yeah.
And I think that the best clues are the ones that are actually they're staring the reader in the face, but they are very subtle.
That's right.
They're right there, but there just isn't. It's just not a red flag.
Right.
I'm also very leery of overuse of red herring type stuff. I think you can really overdo leading people by the nose, only to leave them stranded on the ice. You know, I think that's a bit much.
I agree completely. Well, Stella, we're almost out of time here. I can see I've only got about a minute and a half left. Now, Cold is available, I assume, online, obviously. And is it going to be in any bookstores, or are you not going to bother with
that? No, that's not my plan. It is available through the print-on-demand, you know, what are they, BMI machines?
POD, I don't know. I know what you mean. Yeah, you can order
print-on-demand machines. I mean, third-place books, university books, anywhere that has the espresso machine I don't know quite what that's called, but anywhere that has that, the book is available there too. But
excellent.
Amazon, Kindle, Kobo, iTunes, any other outlet.
Well, Stella, thank you so much for joining me today. It is always great
fun
to talk to you.
Nice
break
in the work day.
Oh, yeah. Now get back to work.
I will.
All right, Stella, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
And everybody else, life is change. It's just changing and changing and changing. You can't get away from it. So roll with those changes. Every day you sit down to write, you're not the same person you were yesterday. So see what new thing has arrived at your doorstep. Maybe it'll be a romance where there had been suspense, or maybe suspense where there had been romance, or maybe poetry. You never know. But until then, whatever you do, whatever changes you do, make sure it's something you love. What you love can change. The fact that you never changes. Never. See you next week.